Welcome, ladies and gents, to the Grim and Bloody Podcast. This show is a presentation of horror, thriller, and suspense, and is intended for a mature audience. Join us at your own risk.
Happy holidays, everyone. This is our Christmas episode. Tonight, we get to talk about Nightmare Before Christmas. I've been looking forward to this one for a long time. It's the type of movie that it works both Halloween and Christmas, you know, any time of the year, really.
I watched it in January.
It's just a really good film by Tim Burton.
Yeah, it is.
Released in 1993. But if you're even a semi-fan of Halloween, you know that this just gets plastered. So we're not going to cover any new ground, but you're going to hear our perspectives on this film. Joining me, we have a full crew tonight. Welcome back, Al.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Yeah, with me as always, Kevin Nicholson. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing well. Looking forward to the talking about Mr. Jack Skellington and his adventures.
Joe Flynn.
It is I, Jack Skellington III.
I would say congratulations that this is Al Omega Sans the Phlegm. I'm glad that you left the phlegm at home, Al.
The problem is now is the dry hacking cough is really great for my back. So
yeah, I've been under the weather since like Monday as well. So I'm right with you, Al.
Wait a minute, I thought you said, did you say dry humping cough? What?
Yes, dry humping cough.
Okay. I heard that too.
Okay, just wanted to make sure.
So, Nightmare Before Christmas, a film that, honestly, as many times as I've seen it, as many versions of this film I own, I've never really kind of delved into the backstory of what made it tick. You know, what his inspiration was and all that. It's just a really good movie. It's a fun movie. And the message is just so, so meaningful that Tim sends through it. I really loved joining at the end. It's just a movie that it's a feel-good movie. It's enough spook. You know, kids can get a little spooky of it. And it also has enough Christmas cheer. You know, it's I think an immaculate pairing of two holidays that have no business joining forces, but they're the two biggest holidays, you know, in America, other than what the 4th of July guys, it's Halloween and Christmas, right?
Right. Well, I would totally disagree with your statement about them not going together.
Well, I'm going to tell you guys, it's very simple what Tim Burton was thinking and how he came up with this. He literally has said on more than one occasion that it was basically seeing a Halloween display being taken down in a store and simply being replaced by a Christmas display. And I think it talks about our fascination with consumerism, our fascination with certain, you know, traditions. And I think he really just takes that very simple example of what he saw and created this whole this whole world of Jack Skellington and Halloween Town and Jack wanting to be different. That's really what he is. He wants to be different. He wants to change things up.
Yes, he wants to change things up, but also if you look at a more visceral level, any person who spent any time in a department store watching Santa Claus, having all these screaming children terrified of this man in the giant red suit, because while a small child might remember that Christmas means presents, it can be quite a number of years before they realize all the other stuff that goes with it, including Santa Claus. So it's for the small children. This is something new every year. Your 5, 6, 7-year-olds, about 7, I think, maybe you start to remember everything well. But, you know, the 3, 4, 5s, this is something new and terrifying every year. And there are a lot of similarities between Halloween and Christmas. And I completely understand why someone might be frightened of Santa Claus and Christmas in general.
Kevin, I think you nailed it on the head when you said, yeah, it was a very simple premise that someone was taking down Halloween and putting up Christmas, because that's Home Depot. That's Lowe's. That is literally, it was like September, right, this year. And this movie was made in 93. It's only gotten worse since then. Every year, it's getting worse, right? We're 2 months from Halloween. They're already putting up Christmas stuff, right? They're trying to be the first out there. So if that was his idea, I mean, he nailed it. He was prophetic, because every year it's just going to get worse, to the point where, you know, you're celebrating Happy New Year's and the stores are announcing their Independence Day sales. At some point, you're like, you know, just have seasonal aisles. I think Target is the only store that really kind of sticks to the time that I've noticed, at least around here. When it's Christmas there. And after Christmas, they keep stuff around, you know, put it on clearance and then move on to the next. But really, it is, it's something, you know. But what do you guys, let's talk about Jack Skellington. Because this is probably one of the most unique characters I've seen in film. You know, in any medium, comic book, TV, silver screen, you name it. He came off the first time I saw him like a proper British man, right? He has a nice suit on, but he's also terrifying. What were you guys, your first impression of Jack Skellington? I know as we get older and we can go on, we can look at the behind the scenes stuff, we can really delve into it, but what I'm more interested in is first impressions, your first time watching of Jack Skellington.
Well, I guess I'd have to say, for me, I don't know about Joe or Al or you, Anthony, I'd have to say for me that Jack is kind of the young guy who is, who looks around at his setting and basically says, this is great, but I want more. I want more than what I have. And whether that says something about us as a, as a society, humanity always wanting, more than what they have. I kind of saw that he was, he sees Halloween Town, he sees everything that is going on, and he thinks this is great, but I want to know what's going on over there in Christmas Town, because that looks great looks great as well. And so he's going over there and he sees this wonderful new world with all kinds of bright lights and bells and whistles and so forth and happy people, and he's wondering about, I want some of that. That's kind of how I look at him. And of course, it took me a little bit to realize as a child, I probably didn't see this as a child, but it took me a little bit to realize that it's actually being played by two actors, or being voiced by two actors. The singing is voiced by Danny Elfman, the great composer, and the acting is done by Chris Sarandon. And I think that they kind of, it ends up, you think they're kind of different, but it still ends up that it still seems like they do work together. They still work as one character. But the big thing for me is that I see a young guy wanting more.
I look at Jack as a curious being. Hey, he's living in his world, but as Kevin pointed out, he wants to explore, to see, hey, there's got to be more to this. And also with Jack, it kind of harkens back to the good old days of animation, like the dancing skeletons that you'd see, like, before a movie, you know, and stuff like that. And that, to me, kind of brought back memories of that, seeing Jack, you know, how he kind of wants to see the world and, you know, not necessarily dance, but, you know, he is just an incredible explorer of wanting to know what's behind every door. And so that's my take on what I think of young Jack.
When I watch this, you know, it's interesting. Many of the characters don't have an age. They're sort of adults. Some of them are old, some of them younger. Most of them are just sort of adults. And I looked at it that Jack was of a very special age. He's the master of his surroundings. He knows everything about Halloween, but he's still young enough to have that interest, that curiosity, that
I like spark,
makes life interesting by not sitting on his laurels, always wanting to do more. And he has that responsibility, he feels, to the rest of the characters in Halloween, because he wants them to do well and prosper as well.
He came off as a ringmaster for me. If you guys remember the Barnum and Bailey circuses, he came off as the maestro of Halloween Town, the unquestioned ruler, the mythic figure. You know, he had a song named after him, right? And that's how the movie begins. So it was a really nice exploration. I'm really glad that the film didn't stray too far from Jack, because it felt like this was his personal journey, and it was. But sometimes, as we've seen in film, a director will want to pad the stats a little bit, right? Put in a couple extra scenes, flesh out some characters. It kind of got to that way with a few of the side characters, most notably the children were nice, Oogie Woogie. But it was Jack through and through. I mean, this film was only 76 minutes long. I mean, that is short, right? But it's a stop motion animation. It was painstaking process to make. And let's give it up, fellas. They haven't done a sequel to this, and thank freaking Jesus, right? Because there's no way they're going to capture this kind of magic again. This was lightning in the bottle kind of fun. I'm glad that if the most that we have to put up with as adults now is Nightmare Before Christmas plastered everywhere on TV and Spirit Halloween whoring it out, then I think we're in pretty good shape.
Let me ask you, I'll follow up on that. Let me ask you three, would this have the soul that it has if Illumination did it?
I don't know.
It would have been cookie cutter. It would have been...
Yeah, exactly.
They have a formula, and their formula works. You know, kids love their movies. I think a lot of that had to do with Steve Carell in the beginning, because he's such a gifted actor. Even just through voice, it comes out. But no, they have a nice formula. They struck gold with the Minions. But it would be just another kind of notch on their belt sort of thing, versus a Tim Burton unique experience that, you know, we've grown accustomed to over the years.
Well, I put Tim Burton to be kind of like in the vein of a Ray Harryhausen of sorts. When you're doing stop motion animation and such as this, and the length of time that it takes, you're actually, and even the process of stop motion animation individually as an animator leads to this, you end up putting a bit of your own personality into the characters that you create. Ray Harryhausen did that, I think, in a certain sense. Nightmare Before Christmas does that as well, and I think that's one of the reasons why fans love stop motion animation. One of the reasons why fans of a certain age go to see this, see this film. They love this this film because they get something Illumination would not do, or could not have, which is a soul. personality with each individual character. There's a difference between the animation in Nightmare Before Christmas mm-hmm. and even, say, more recently, Pinocchio by Guillermo del Toro, and comparing it to Illumination or Disney Pixar.
Yeah, I mean, traditionally with stop motion, it is excruciatingly long, right? I mean, how many times, right, just to get a single movement, how many shots does it require? And so, you know,
look up Ray Harryhausen, he'll tell you, you'll see, yeah, how many months, in fact, a year or two that it took to make the films that he did.
Yeah. So, you know what that does is that puts an intense amount, it should put an intense amount of scrutiny on the script, right? He's, yeah, like, mm-hmm, if we're going to go through this much trouble to get this kind of movement, the script has to be not just good, it has, sure, to be amazing.
Special, yeah.
Yeah, it has to be unique. It has to be special. That's the thought point. You know, I'm sure there's been stop motion out there that, you know, the animators killed themselves and the script sucked ass. I'll go ahead and throw in the film festival. We've had a couple stop animation submissions here. Right. I think maybe two or three. They've been good. You know, few minutes.
Really? Yes. Yeah.
But they were solid, and I appreciated the extra behind the scenes shots that they. One of them, it was like two guys who were cleaning up a zombie mess or something. The name escapes me. It was the first season, but it was like maybe 4 minutes.
What was the one we had last year that we had that we all liked about it was a treatise on death. And
you mean with the wizard
and so forth, the stop motion animation one that we had.
I think there was a wizard showed. Right, it was Wizard in Training, that's what I remember.
No, there, nope, was a different one where the guy drives to and he visits that lonely girl outside her home, and it has to do with death. I'm forgetting the name name of it, but I see when stop motion animation is done so very well, like it is in Nightmare Before Christmas, you just, when you, from the opening minutes, you are just in a series in a sense of wonder, and that's hard to do. I was in a sense of wonder seeing it, and I was an adult at the time, so it was hard. It's hard to do that. It's hard to get adults with a sense of wonder, and it does that. It did that for me, and it still does it to a small extent now.
Yeah. And how many generations has this film nailed, right? It's usually one generation, right? A good movie, a solid movie, will nail a generation, and that generation comes back, right? Nostalgia will kick in and keep, sure, us going. But this film, it nails the younger generations. And, you know, I always call back to Spirit Halloween because they obviously have a very nice working relationship with the IP. But I see adults my age with Nightmare Before Christmas memorabilia. Then I see kids running around with the costumes, right? Probably my daughter's age of 8. It has its lasting power, not with us, but also it has appeal power in the younger generation who mostly just want to go watch YouTube and TikTok, right? That's how good this film, and that's how unique it is. Is it can be reapplied to younger audiences? How many times over?
True.
And course, so, what is your guys' favorite scene? What's your guys' favorite scene in the film? Mine's the kidnap Santa Claus.
Mine's going to be the commercial
where Barrow gets launched across the room
when he falls into what's the world called, Santa Claus?
Okay.
Yeah, what's this song? That's the most, one of the most catchiest songs I've ever heard.
This is Halloween, my amigo.
No, that's the beginning. I'm talking about what's this? Right, in the magic everywhere. Yeah. What's this? Right,
that's it.
It brings you back. It brings you back to a kid. You could be in your 40s, 50s. It just brings you back to that wonderment.
My favorite scene definitely
when Locke launched all across the room. Though you got to laugh at that.
True, I did.
Locke launches Barrow across the across the room.
Now, who liked the mayor? Yeah. I love the mayor.
The mayor is fantastic.
My God, I Now I want to look up the voice actor cool. who did that. Yeah. But man, he just had that deep throaty. When he was in the first song, he just stood out, right? He just like, in this town. Yeah. Right? It's like, it just hit you. Mm-hmm. Oh, love that guy. Now I want to find out who that guy was. But
you're not me.
He was a good singer, but I'm hoping that it was the same voice
Glenn Shaddix.
Throughout. Glenn Shaddix.
Glenn Shaddix.
That guy stood out for me as far as the secondary Glenn characters. Shaddix. I love that guy. The character, the way they sculpted
Paul
the
Rubens
character
is locked
matched the voice.
Is dynamite. Is Paul Rubens is locked.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's great. In fact,
Paul Rubens is locked. That is
As a side note, I would have thought that Paul Rubens and the guy that played Urkel should get together and do a Christmas Halloween Hallmark made-for-TV movie about Pee-wee and his
yeah.
childlike belief in magic and Urkel's belief in science being at odds with each other.
There we go.
And coming together. I always thought that would have been a great pairing, but unfortunately we won't get
it. Now, what did you guys feel about the distinctive voice of William Hickey as Dr. Finkelstein?
Funny. He was great. And
trademark mad scientist, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He's got that gravelly, you know, voice, which can only be done by too much whiskey and cigarettes.
It's... Yeah. Cigarettes.
Yeah.
Giving us great voice acting for years.
What was your favorite scene in the movie?
Well, I'm more of an Oogie Boogie fan.
Mm.
I loved the Oogie Boogie.
Oogie Boogie.
Yes.
We Oogie Boogie all night.
Special interest to the girl unsewing her leg to be seductive with it at one point with the distraction. I love that.
Yeah. Now I'm a little biased because Cammy dressed up as Sally. I want to see... either last year or the year before, and it was just a lovely costume. The character, as far as the secondary characters go, you can point out it's probably like a half dozen that just really stood out. That's how special this movie was. But I loved Sally's character. As you said, you know, just the little stuff that she did. She knew that she was sewn together. She found ways around it. The character wasn't down. The character wanted to explore. She wanted to live. You know, it was a sweet romance. I know that sounds cliche, but with Sally throwing herself in Jack Skellington, not really. Yeah.
But I thought that was an interesting reference.
I did not realize. I'm just looking at some trivia. I'm looking at some trivia here. Walt Disney considered doing a sequel to it in 2001, but rather than using stop motion animation, this is what we talked about, how it would look if Illumination or Pixar did it. They wanted to use computer animation, and it was Tim Burton who stepped in and convinced Disney to drop the idea. And he says, "I was always very protective of Nightmare not to do sequels or things of that kind. As you know, Jack Visits Thanksgiving World or other kinds of things, just because I felt the movie had a purity to it and that the people that like it." Thank God that sequel never happened.
Yes.
It would have stained the franchise.
Exactly.
It really would have. It wouldn't have the lasting power.
No.
It just wouldn't be the same, really.
And I am glad for that as well, because, again, hey, we could have 13 Nightmare Before Christmas, and one of them would be in space.
Yeah.
No.
That's why we always end up
now,
in space.
Now, if somebody like, say, we always end up in space, or we end up... I don't know. We end up in space, or we end up, tangling with deadly, you know, turning it into a horror film where Jason
and Michael Myers are involved. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, all right, guys. Closing thoughts. Nightmare Before Christmas. where does it land as far as your top five for either season?
I am going to go.
Number one for Halloween for me. Number one. Christmas, I would put it, I definitely put it at number four, number five among Christmas movies.
Halloween for me, it would be at number four. And for Christmas, number two.
Number two? What's number one?
And number one would be the classical It's a Wonderful Kevin's Life.
Nightmare Before Christmas is my... Well, it depends on if I'm watching this, the kids, it's number one. But it's number two because I have to watch Halloween. Halloween 1978 will always be it for me. That's just... I don't think we... Have we done a retrospective on Halloween yet?
I don't think so.
No? Oh, we have to rectify that next year.
On the original, no.
Yeah, no. We have to rectify that.
We've talked about Halloween plenty of time.
Yeah, we just never actually...
Jamie Lee Curtis come on the show.
Surprise!
Can we do a show? Can we do a retrospective on Halloween without ever bringing up the name David Gordon Green? Can we do that?
Of course. Oh,
yeah.
That's the key.
A whole hour. I could do a whole hour just on the 1970 one.
Yeah.
Make no connection whatsoever to the current series.
Oh, we don't have. But Halloween number two, Christmas. It's probably like number four or number five, just because this is going to sound strange, but have you seen the Arnold Schwarzenegger Jingle All the Way?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's funny. That's
number
funny.
Two for me. Number one is National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. I watch that every year. I've probably watched that for like the last 5 years. I just had to put it on. It's just hilarious. Every year it gets funnier. It's the same jokes every time.
Yeah. You guys will laugh at me because I say number one in Christmas for me is the Muppet Christmas Carol.
Oh, that's lovely. Oh, yeah.
Hey, I don't. I'm not gonna joke on that at all because it's Christmas and it's a lovely little film. A movie that I also would like to bring up real quickly is our little pal Gizmo, aka Gremlins.
Mogwai!
Mogwai!
That's right. Mogwai, yeah. Because that is a Christmas movie, so I just wanted to throw it in there, people.
I'm surprised we haven't talked about Die Hard as far as a Christmas movie.
Maybe because... That is not a Christmas movie! No, I will not. Oh, I get into it with all those people that call it a Christmas movie.
Die Hard.
You know?
It is a movie, Christmas movie.
Come on.
All right.
It's like the ultimate Christmas movie.
That's another show entirely. But Al, you didn't say what your...
Al, go ahead. What you got?
Well, I was going to say, that Die Hard is the ultimate Christmas movie because it's all about a guy fighting with his family to start with, and then people doing last-minute shopping. So, you think about it, trying to get into the safe. But for me, for Halloween... This is probably like a two or three for me. I like it very much. And for Christmas, it's probably more like four or five. Not that it's bad, but I'm old, so I'm stuck with the Albert Finney Christmas Carol. Which is on my show this week. I'm showing Carol for Another Christmas, which if you haven't seen it for Christmas, you need to go see it. Watch that one. It's a Christmas Carol rewritten by Rod Serling. So it's very emotional.
I'm going to give a shout out here. I know we're not going to have enough time before Christmas rolls around to talk about it. Maybe we do it next year. But Michael Daugherty's Krampus.
Very good.
2015. Adam Scott, Toni Collette. That movie, that's another one that I saw maybe a month ago. Oh, it's just good. It's, you know, he did almost not quite what Tim Burton did in combining the movies, but he is also responsible for one of the top Halloween movies in Trick or Treat, right? In horror, and the top, probably one of the top horror recent time for Christmas.
I mean, he
knocked both. He knocked both holidays out of the park, especially with Trick or Treat. I know more people will probably know him from Trick or Treat because of the merchandise, right? But Krampus is, from beginning to end, it's just a well thought out, well executed, well acted movie. That, and again, thank you. No sequels. There's spinoffs. There's knockoffs. No direct sequel on either of these films. So I think we have a number of gems out there that are holding true. That yeah, we have no problem rewatching. You know, when the holiday comes around. So Krampus, you're good. We see you.
let me give you an idea.
By the way, before we, I'll go ahead.
Something out there. Krampus is just a horror version of Polar Express.
Ooh. The one with Tom Hanks?
Yes.
Interesting.
A lot of the same development, same characters.
Guys, before we wrap this up with on the Nightmare Before Christmas, we can't go without mentioning Danny Elfman's score.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
this guy continues to just do it, and you know the 10 songs that he wrote for Nightmare, just superb. I can't say enough about it, and it's another reason why the film gels with me to this day.
Yeah, it hits you in all channels. It hits you visually, it hits you sonically. That pairing is probably. That could be, you know what? That's another show. Like, who's your top director, composer teams, right? I know we're going to talk about Christopher Nolan and Hans Zimmer. What about Ridley Scott and Hans Zimmer, yeah. Right? What about all the pairings like Ridley Scott and Jerry Goldsmith?
Al Omega.
Al Omega, right?
No one knows my
music. Yeah.
We got to do a show.
I'm sure Aljo and I can come up with just a whole bunch of, you know, director composers going back 40 years ago.
What about Ridley Scott and Vangelis?
Huh? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That would be a fun show. I'm going to write that down. We got to do a show like that.
We should.
Well, let's
take.
Go ahead.
I'll take anybody. I'll tell you what. I'll take. You know, Sergio Leone and Ennio Morricone.
Yep, there we go.
That's it. Let's drop the mic.
Boom. Good nice. Night, Seattle.
Well, let's put a bow on this. Right. Pun intended. The Nightmare Before Christmas. Al, you want to take us out?
As always, thanks for joining us. Watch horror films. Keep America strong.